Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and with me I have Intimidus Rex and Aphasiana. We are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have a wide variety of shows on different topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And let me start with one at a time. First of all, hello, Rex.
Hello.
How goes it?
All right. What's doing?
Oh, you know what? Just looking forward to hanging out with you, Phasey, and maybe some other cool poets, delving into the poetry. You know, I'm getting over this, whatever I have going on with my whole body falling apart and my voice falling apart. But you know what? That's okay because, you know, I've got great things to look forward to. So very cool. And hello, Phasey. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Hello.
Pretty good. I'm excited because tomorrow I'm going on a road trip. And I get to go to Fan Expo, which is basically Comic-Con, and I get in free, so I'm just, like, fangirling so hard.
Oh, my gosh. That is, that is so exciting for you. A road trip.
Will I be dressed? Yes, I will be dressed, yes. Rex. I'm not going naked.
Well, you know what I mean. Are you going character?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm there. I get in free because I'm in a medieval reenactment society, and so we're kind of going to be, like, showing the more historical side of, like, you know, because often history is used in fantasy stories, but we're the authentic, if you're following history side. So I will be dressed up as a Norse lady from Viking times. A shield maiden.
Of course.
Oh, my
yes,
bad. I hope we get to see pictures.
Sure. I'll send you some.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. So. Oh. All right. Well, first of all, I'll say we have two contests tonight, but the first one got enough entries that we may not get to the second one. So I'll just tell you what I decided for the first contest. Well, it just so happened that, like I usually do, I was wandering the internet and I came across some unusual looking chairs, you know, weird, creepy, just unique, unusual, bizarre. And I thought, oh, how fun would it be to take these pictures of these different chairs, start a contest, call the contest, grab a seat. And at first it started out slow. You know how that goes sometimes with contests. They start out slow, but then it picked up and it filled up. And lots, you could tell people really had fun with the prompts and really got creative with them. So, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to tonight's write. And with that being said, Rex, whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I forgot I'm in it. All right. Oh, okay. Excuse me. All right, Paige, we're going to start with you right off the bat. We're going to do Cozy Up With Me by Betty Page.
Okay. Cozy Up With Me by Betty Page. Cozy up with me, embraced by my pink petals, so velvety soft. Snuggle up with me like a child within a rose, held in my center. Feel my warm embrace. I'll be your plush comforter, wrapped around you, sweet. Luscious diamonds twirling around on your fingers luxuriously. Dazzling, exotic pink hibiscus adornment, crowned in precious jewels. Champagne atmosphere, melodically intrigued, phantasmagoric. Cozy up with me, embraced by my pink petals, so velvety soft. Snuggle up with me like a child within a rose, held in my center. Feel my warm embrace. I'll be your plush comforter, wrapped around you, sweet. End poem.
Wonderful read, Faisy, and what a beautiful write by Betty Page. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it comes off as implicit with the sort of embraced by my pink petals. I'll be your plush comforter, wrapped around your sweet. Pink hibiscus adornment, crown of precious jewels. There is a rosy note to each central phrasing. If that might not be totally full-on truth, but it just walks that simple note of there is something a little bit deeper in this than just the sort of a hug itself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Faisy, your thoughts?
I definitely interpreted it in a sexual way, with the petals and the you know, the snuggling into and being wrapped around, I felt like this was definitely an erotic kind of, I wouldn't even say double entendre. It's using beautiful flower language to say sensual things. I think the thing that threw me off a little bit was because it has the child within the rose. But I still think it works for the most part as a sensual piece. Most of it seemed like so soft and wonderful, but the part that threw me off a little bit is the diamonds twirling around your fingers, because that looks really pretty, but in terms of like the feel of it, it is not like the velvet or the soft petals or that kind of thing. The diamonds are actually like really rough and painful. Like, if I have my engagement ring on the wrong way, it hurts. So that part I was kind of like, ooh, it's pretty, but maybe not the tactile feel that I'm looking for. but I took it a little literally there. Very well done.
It really is, absolutely. And I, too, saw the sensuality in it, but also that idea of something deeper, a love that helps you to feel protected and secure. The picture she wrote to us, prompt 4, which was a chair that kind of looks like one of those old-time record players with the trumpet-shaped thing. But I think it does definitely look also like it could be interpreted as a flower of some sort opening up. And there, the actual bottom of the chair does look like diamonds. I thought I liked your comment on the roughness of the diamonds, but I also thought that did speak, you know, on the idea of the richness of the relationship. And wonderful imagery throughout, beautiful 5-7-5 line. I did like the eroticism in this. Dazzling exotic pink hibiscus adornment crowned in precious jewels. And, the use of the word phantasmagoric, which is just wonderful. And embraced by my pink petals is definitely deliciously sexual. And then feel my warm embrace. What a beautiful, heartfelt line, speaking on that idea of two people who have a relationship that go beyond the physical. Wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
The Chair of Death by Daniel Duhamel. Wooden masterpiece of destruction, oleander leaves of poison mixed with varnish spread over a chair. Made from the mastermind of a serial killer who came up with the perfect weapon of death like some mad scientist. And anyone who sits upon the chair meets an untimely death from the sweat secreted from the body slowly entering through the skin, rendering them incapacitated until their body shuts down. And boom.
Great read, Rex. And Daniel wrote to a picture of a chair that's shaped like a scorpion made out of a wonderful dark wood, which is actually a chair I would very much like to have for my castle, you know, when I actually get a castle. And Faisy, your thoughts on this, right?
Well, I think excellent choice of chair. That is definitely the one that I would want out of these. And I liked how he put the oleander leaves in there. That's a nice detail with the poison flower making up the varnish. Because it doesn't even, like, it doesn't have anything specific to the oleander, but it's just a really nice touch. Where is it? The chair being a weapon of death is just brilliant. And it's not like an electric chair. It's just, it has its own subtle ways of getting you. Like sweat secreted from the body slowly entering through the skin. That is a really creepy way of the chair getting you. And I really like it. There was something, I think it was snakes. I was watching some show yesterday, and it was talking about how some spiders can bite you, and then, like, years later, that piece of you rots off, and you can die from it. And it's like a delayed reaction of that venom getting into the part of your body. It's nuts. So, because it was on a TV show, and then I, of course, looked it up because I'm, interested like that, and then I just went down this rabbit hole. Now, mind you, this was in the middle of the night, so not my best moment of clarity in terms of thinking, but, still, I just remembered that when I read that line, and I'm like, this is brilliant. And now I feel like this should be a novel where somebody uses a chair like this to get people. Oh, Daniel, you have to make this into, like, a murder mystery. Oh, I love it.
Oh, my gosh. I like that idea, and I second that notion or motion. So, yeah, definitely. It should be a short story with this chair incorporated into it. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, the chair does belie the notion of what's to be expected out of it. But even though you don't get the stinging end of it, there is poison delivered. Oleander's a good play because all you have to do is boil down the leaves to get poison out of it. And, hey, why not brush it on the chair and let the let one's own heat and sweat incorporate through the skin, take it that way. That's a nice touch. Something a little bit different. Might take a little time, but what the essence with that is, they wouldn't actually die in the chair. For a couple hours, you talk over books or something, watch a football game or something, then send them on their merry way to die elsewhere. So, can't be come back right back to you. I like that thought too.
Great observations there.
He does make the point at the end of this. He wants to see him die, so he's making a strong concoction, and he's not letting him go. Then he's got to get rid of the bodies.
Yep. Well, I have to say there, Rex, that comment makes me think that perhaps you're a mastermind or a mad scientist or quite a bit of both. Oh, very cool comment. And I like this. Yeah, exactly. But I liked his attention to detail. Like, for being a brevity, there was quite a bit of details in this. I did like the oleander leaves mixed with the varnish, the idea of the slow death. It made me think in a way of poison ivy from Batman, and how the poison oozes from her lips when she kisses, only this is a chair poisoning an entire body. So in great lines all the way through. But I do like I said, his attention to detail, and especially in that end stanza where he says, and anyone who sits upon a chair meets an untimely end from the sweat secreted from the body. Wonderful lines and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Test of the Jest by Dark and Doris. That was yours.
All right. Surely you jest, please come, have a rest. While all of the rest make fun of this nest, it's quite comfy, just the best. It's called the jester's seat, but I'll say it's quite the treat to have the chance to rest your feet upon the crown of clowns you meet. So please, won't you come and rest your head upon my jester's bed? There's no telling what you'll find when you let me greet your mind. I bow my hat to you, so tell me, what will you do? End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it's a funky chair for one thing, and the voice kind of offers up that note. Yeah, come crawl on my ass and have a seat, because that's exactly what the picture looks like. The way the legs are bent up, and the draw on the back, you got that low cut, so you got the double cheek rendering as the tops of the chair on either side, and then the flow down into the seat, and the back end walks out a bit different too. So it does offer up a note to being you'll end up being the butt of all the jokes in the house.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I did think this was a chair that could have multiple interpretations. And you could definitely tell that Dark and Auras had fun with this right. Great comment there, Rex. And Faithy, your thoughts?
This had a nice rhyme to it. It had a playfulness that I thought suited what the topic was. It starts off with those kind of short lines, and then it grows a little bit, which kind of works with the layout of the chair itself. I can definitely see how it would be a jester's hat, although when I first looked at it, I thought of Star Wars, the Twi'leks, the ladies who have like the two brain tails. The Likhu. I thought it was a Twi'lek head with Likhu, which of course it's not, because be a small audience probably for that, although I totally would. The jester thing, once it said that, I'm like, oh, that's what that is supposed to be. Okay. I think that it was playful in just the right way. So the poem really matched the chair once I wrapped my head around it not being a Star Wars lady.
Right, but I totally, as soon as you said that, I could totally see it. I love how people see the same prompt in different ways, and it definitely would have been fun to see what direction you would have taken that. But I really like how Dark and Auras got into the mind of the jester, you know, who puts on a show for everybody. And I like that she ends this with a question. I bow my hat to you, so tell me, what will you do? Because, you know, that makes me think of the idea that oftentimes the jester was the bearer of bad news and then had to wait for the person's response. So, great writing and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Bird,
you have a caller.
Yeah.
Oh, we have a caller. Wonderful. All right. Hello, area code 662. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please?
ID, Infinite Destruction, not Identity Crisis.
Oh, well, hello there. Good to have you join us. All right. Very cool. Thank you for being here. Did you get a chance to hear that or read that last poem by Dark and Auras?
I was reading over it as I was waiting to be picked up, but
so what did you think?
Well, I kind of feel like what I'm picking up from it, and maybe I didn't hear what all y'all might have said. It might be redundant at this point, but it's like pretty much in a relationship, whenever you're the one that seems to be carrying the weight of the whole relationship, and yet you just feel like you're just a piece of furniture. You sit down on me and you lay your burdens on me and whatnot while you need me. And then when you don't, just there is a decoration, I guess. Seems like they feel like they're being used. And it was a pretty good way of putting it in the words that they did. So it was a great piece.
Very cool. Great observations there. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Burden Me by Guilty. That one's for you, Casey.
For me? Okay. Burden Me by Guilty. With the weight of your distress, lay your weary body upon my white dress. Unspool your misery of your hard day. Complain of whatever malady has come your way. Plead ignorance, my suffering and pain, my once sturdy wooden frame chipped and splintered. Never do you ask, is there anything I can do for you? End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Faisy. Such a powerful brevity there by Guilty. And ID, let's start with your thoughts.
So this is actually the poem that I read accidentally. What I seen last is in the group chat.
Oh,
deal.
Okay.
So, commented just a while ago. That might be why it seemed like my words didn't quite make sense, because it was about this poem instead. I apologize, but yeah, again, just to iterate it, it was a very, you know, brief yet powerful way of saying, I'm here for you, and I don't even care if you acknowledge whether or not, whether I've got my own pain or suffering, and yet at the same time, asking the question, why do you not ask me, is there anything you can do for me? It is a really great piece, though. Great job, Guilty.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I kind of smiled when I heard it before on the last comment, because I knew where he'd just gotten in the room, so he picked up on this piece. I knew where he was going. But I agree with his analysis on it, the thought of being that person in the relationship who ends up being the considered one piece of furniture because nobody really pays attention. They're just always there, seemingly. And so you get that angle. But it also, because of the motif to the chair itself, it kind of hints at that note to slavery, because it's a black woman in a white dress. So you get that note to the lower class angle and the thought of those you bring in to do the housework, so to speak. Because Guilty hits on the back end of this. Plead ignorance to my suffering and pain, my once sturdy wooden frame chipped and splintered. Never do you ask, is there anything I can do for you? Why? Because you're always asking them to do something for you, but the iteration on the back end doesn't fall on them. So you hit the nail on the head with your interpretation. I like that. Thank you. And that comes back to you, Ben.
Well, you know, great comment there, Rex. I have to say this was actually, I think, the most written to prompt, and I can see why, because you know, there's so much emotion and so much potential metaphor within this chair. So, yeah. And Faisy, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with everything that's been said so far. Part of why I think it works is in the image. The head is kind of like looking up, and it almost looks like she's like kneeling because the way the skirts go, like the way it's flowing, and that there's that sort of like subjugation kind of like being the servant, and to write that in this way is really awesome. But especially like unspool your misery on your hard day. The unspooling makes you think of like the thread coming apart, which just works with like the looking like a dress and the way that it's all built together. And then my once sturdy wooden frame chipped and splintered. The idea that, you know, there was strength there that has been worn away by someone not taking care of the person who's taking care I was going to him, but really I don't know that it's a man, to the person who is using the person who is the chair has not been equal in their compassion and caring. So it's a really powerful piece, and I agree with everything that all of you have said.
Amen to that. Well said there, Faisie. Yeah, this is really a brilliant rite showing the idea of an unequal relationship and a suffering that isn't acknowledged. And, you know, great lines all the way through, but I did especially like that line, plead ignorance to my suffering and pain. Wonderful lines and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Coming Together by Time Teller. And ID, could you read that for us, please?
I sure can. Let me hop back on over to that. Coming Together by Time Teller. We're chalk and cheese, you and me, black and white, a lover, juxtaposition. Wine and dine, flowers for your plate, you'll be mine, opposites, face. And so to the crunch, thus protein meal, here we are out for brunch. Me, I'm Matt, the knife, dangerous and full of strife. I join with you in a collaboration for a better life, celebration, end poem.
Great read there, ID, and what an amazing write by Time Teller. Who wrote to the picture of a chair that looks like a spoon and a fork bended together. And Faisie, your thoughts?
I was a little thrown off by some of the spelling here, but I kind of think it's intentional in order to change, like, how we say it, like giving it an accent kind of feel to make it flow a certain way. Like juxtaposition, there's a U in there that I wouldn't expect. Where's the other one? Collaboration. No, wait, that's not the one. There were three words that protein.
Opposite.
Yes.
Opposites
instead of opposite. But the way that it's done is almost like in a playful way. Like it doesn't seem necessarily like a typo. Like I think maybe it was for the sound of it, playing with the words. At first I wasn't looking at the screen. I was just listening, and I was like, ID, you're saying that weird. And then I looked at it, and I'm like, no, it's spelled like that. I was going to give you heck. It was spelled different. The chalk and cheese is interesting because I don't associate those two together unless you're like writing on a charcuterie board what kind of cheese it is. Then putting it with like black and white, whereas like both the chalk and the cheese are white in my brain. So it's just interesting comparison. And then there's some fun rhymes, like crunch and brunch. Brunch can be crunchy. Some interesting word choices, and I'm just really curious about the spelling and the intention there.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree. It was just really interesting and fun. Yeah, I did notice the way he spelled juxtaposition actually has the word spit in it, And opera site actually has the word sit in it. Protein does not have the word sit in it, but it has the word high. And so I can't help but maybe think that, you know, your observations are great in the idea that he's bringing out the theme of two people sitting together, two people, you know, tied together within their relationship. So very cool. And Rex, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
They were deliberate. If you look at the picture, the spoon is bent as the seat, and you've got the fork as the chair back. So the lovers' juxtaposition works out as lovers juxtapose sit you on. It's a play on the chair itself and how it's configured. Sit you on. Two lovers, the fork and the spoon. What else we got here? Opera sites. They're two different things. So we're talking bank lovers again, opposites, but it is opera sit, so to speak, plus it being there at the table, so it's also a site. So it's opera sites, opera sits. The note of, again, duality, but playing off the visuals as well as the voice. And then that throw-in at the back end. Me, this is the voice mentioning the third wheel, so to speak. I'm Matt the Knife, dangerous and full of strife. I'll join with you in a collaboration for a better life celebrations. You can if you play around with it, but if you're eating meat, you need a knife. So there's got to be a little extra voice within the piece to complement the spoon and the fork. Even though most of what you would eat, you would go with the spoon and the fork. The knife is a crucial element. So it is well-played voice, and it offers up a note of a tinge of wry humor with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment, Rex. And ID, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I kind of feel bad that I let the misspelling throw my reading off, but it's not misspellings, as we've discovered. It was intentional. And so I hats off to you for playing with the letters to add extra meaning. Like, that's something that only a writer really can do. And I've been digging into this to see if I could see anything else deeper that y'all haven't already mentioned. But the only thing I could think of is that right here, this is in So to the Crunch, thus protein, here we are out for brunch. It's to get down to the wire of it and get down to the, you know, so why we're here, why I'm here with you is because, well, you're having a meal that has protein in it, like you said, meat, and you got to have a knife to cut meat with. So we're here to eat, and here I am, you need me. And so I'll join you in making this an easier meal. But other than that, I mean, it was a great write, and definitely whimsical to me in a way that it really requires you to read it and then reread it. Not because it's cryptic, but because there's more to it than meets the eye. Almost like this piece is a transformer. But altogether, great write, and I enjoyed reading it.
Oh, absolutely. And whimsical is a perfect word to describe that. And yeah, some rites definitely do need to be and should be read multiple times to get the nuances out of them. So great observations. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Girly Chair by Kind Poet. That one's all yours.
All right. Plastic with pink swirling within, this novelty chair screams the dreams of my girlhood. Oh, how I would have adored this glorious girly chair had it graced my girlish bedroom. I would have sat upon its slick seat while wearing a tacky toy tiara while pretending to be a princess. I would have gazed out my window while envisioning that the prairie was my kingdom to command. In my lap, I would grip a mock magic wand that mastered my imaginary subjects. Meekly, they would kneel before my plastic pink throne while begging to play with my toys. Sometimes this princess would feel ever genteel and grant her people her kindness. At other times, this princess would feel quite cruel and deny them their due playtime. My mind of my childhood has jumped through my memory as I gawk at this girly chair. Sweetness and cruelty mingled with my immature mind and battled each other with fury. I only pray that today I would remain kind and genteel if I sat upon this girly chair. And I'm so glad that Kind Poet was inspired by that particular chair, which took me back to when the see-through, the clear phones were popular in the 80s and early 90s, I think. But mostly I think it was the 80s. But, yeah, it took me back to my girlhood, childhood, too, although I was more likely to paint that chair black. But still, there's a certain nostalgia to it. So I'm glad she was inspired by it. And ID, your thoughts?
It seems like it's, I guess, somewhat familiar with girls playing pretend and as kids, and it's being like a pretty pink swirly kid chair, and like the writer is a pretend princess, so to speak, and I could see from this right, let's see, where did I see it? Sometimes this princess was forever genteel and grant her people her kindness. I find this a fun read because it kind of reminds me of how a girl pretending to be queen amongst her friends and is like, sure, you can play with the Barbie doll, that, and sure, you can go and play with that convertible car type deal. And I really enjoyed it. It just kind of it definitely brought images to my head. So, and I always love when a piece is able to make me visualize what's going on. And so I think they did a really great job. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And Faith, your thoughts?
I like that Kind Poet made it a plastic chair, because my thought when I looked at that picture was that if it was glass, I would definitely break it because I would run into it all the time because it's so see-through. I was relieved at that first word, plastic. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not going to destroy it. I enjoyed the kind of nostalgic feeling of it, and even the recognition that, you know, it wasn't a perfect, beautiful crown that she had when she was young. It was a tacky toy tiara, which has a realistic look at it, but also has great alliteration. I like the sound of tacky toy tiara. The magic wand, but not just a magic wand, a mock magic wand. It points out that, like, none of this was real. It was all her imagination, and it gives the setting of this childhood dream. I also really loved the sweetness and cruelty mingled with my immature mind, because there's something about a little girl dressed up as a princess. Yes, there is that, you know, cute sweetness, but also wanting to be in charge of all of those subjects and bossing people around, there is a cruelty to that. They're all swirled together, those different feelings, works well with the image of the chair having those swirls within it. So I thought this was a really good take on the chair, making it into a story.
It was, absolutely. And, you know, that's the way girls can be for sure, whether you're talking little girls or grown-ups. You know, we can be so darn sweet and cooperative, or, you know, we can really at times be manipulating, you know. So, yeah, really great comment there. And Rex, share with us your thoughts and then bring us to the next right, please.
Well, those first four stanzas walk a note of, as Faithy hit on, nostalgia, until you get to that last line in stanza four, was my kingdom to command. And then the next six walk into that note of, you hit on how sweet little girls are sometimes. It apparently, she didn't play well with others. She needed that note of everything her way or the highway, so to speak. So this kind of, next six stands walk on that note of someone who had a really bitchy attitude and didn't play well with others unless they did exactly what she wanted, how she wanted it done, when she wanted it done. And then you got that last stanza. I only pray that today I would remain kind and genteel if I sat upon this girly chair. She might like the memory of the girly chair as something pretty in the moment, but didn't like the attitude that she displayed back then, and hope she's grown into a more of a mature person mentally than what she viewed herself back in the day.
Great comment there, Rex. Absolutely.
All right. We've got "The Lap of Misery" by Scott Sharp. Oh, and you got a sound clap for this.
Yes, we do. Oh, dear. Okay, I'm going to guess it's this one. If it isn't, I will stop it and play the other one. All right, here we go.
"The Lap of Misery. Her dark skin, arms, and legs exposed, carved from the hanging tree, stained cherry limbs in a white dress, scuttled into a corner, slid like time over the coals of prayer, barefoot and barley-eyed, running, chasing the wind outside the white curtain, blowing hot down on the plantation."
Wonderful read and write there, Scott. Wow, this one is another powerful write, inspired by that one chair with of the woman leaned back. I thought he really delved deeply into the history of slavery and that cruel history, you know, and he got so much from that chair and the imagery he brings forth. I really particularly liked his reference to the hanging tree, you know, trees where lynchings happened, where it makes you think of the song "Strange Fruit." The carved from the hanging tree was a particularly strong line on a dark, dark time period in history. So, wonderfully done. And Faizy, your thoughts?
This is upsetting because anything about slavery is, of course, but I think he did a really great job with it with the detail, the hanging tree, having the wood of the chair carved from that is quite the thought. And then the stained cherry limbs, it makes sense in the fact that it could be cherry wood, but also if someone was working outside on the plantation, they could actually have the cherry kind of stain on their hands. I mean, I've picked cherries. You end up having hands that look like they're bloody. and you would be stained by the cherry. So it works in multiple ways. Stained cherry limbs, someone who's working the plantation, but also the limbs of the wood. And then I like slid like time. That's a good line. The fact that it's listed as a plantation and a hot place, is one of the places that there might be might have been or was a slave who was mistreated, and so this is an intense. It's amazing what a chair can inspire. And over the coals of prayer, another really good line. This is impressive, Scott. Well done.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
It is a harder note than the other one we read, which was which hit on two levels, but basically covered most of this. But I did like that note. Scuttled into a corner. That's a nice touch right there, as well as barefoot and barley eyed. There's a richness in that choice of wording, and blowing hot down on the plantation. A note to southern climes in the heat of summer, not easy times.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Well said there, Rex. And ID, your thoughts?
So yeah, I guess that not to repeat everything that was said, but I'm picking up on everything else that has already been said. But I just want to give a shout out to how well that he described the chair itself as both a chair, what it's made of, but also as a person, and kind of acknowledging that it is a chair, but also giving it a personification. The technique that was done here was just excellent. From the dark skin, arms and legs exposed, the carved from the hanging tree, stained cherry limbs in a white dress. It's just the barefoot. And then also describing the room with the white curtain. But telling a story in short words, and not to say that it was cryptic, as in not able to be understood, but that it was done so without blatantly without straight up saying, what he's talking about. You dig into the words and you still kind of, you feel the hint toward the southern the southern climate, like Rex was saying, the hints towards slavery is already been said. I don't know. I just really enjoyed this. It was very great brevity, and I thoroughly enjoyed hearing it from you as well. Thank y'all.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
All righty. Bad Furniture by Peter Solway. Almodovar to Dish Production. Become an interior decorator. Flood the Barcelona with obscene furniture. Armchair to Rapier. Stuffing American. Poof from Jamaica. AIDS festering. Penal scorpions. Oh, cruel modernism. No more alone with television. Leather-studded dreams. Black lounges full of serpents. Tongue and groove venom. Six syphilis of termites, fleas of fabric infestation, itching, remote clutching, moving to the next program. Game show contestant, edgy in her seat, steel and contemporary vinyl, prize of redecoration by the Almodovar brand, guessing, Edwardian? Bad Defeat, sound of a Jap Zero, no art by Kia Fuji. Umbrellas on a glowing beach to swell and melt.
Great read there, Rex. And as always, brilliant and creative, thought-provoking imagery and metaphors by Peter Solway. And Faizy, I'd love to hear your interpretation of Peter's poem.
Well, as usual, I had to look up who he was referencing. So Almodovar, can't even say his name, is a Spanish film director, and he's known for his bold colors and glossy decor and, like, pop culture references. So that gives me an idea of what chairs he's looking at there. But I think he used more than one of the prompts because a few of the ones seem to be mentioned here, like the penal scorpions. So that works on multiple levels. I thought that was kind of fun. I really liked the black lounges full of serpents, tongue, and groove venom. You can picture those kind of underground pub speakeasy places that have the pool hustlers and the pimps and like all that kind of stuff, and they're in like those really extravagant chairs. Like, I only know such things through movies and television, so I'm sure super exaggerated. But like the funny outfits and the way that they kind of strut around when they're in those kind of positions, like they got the, I'm picturing this pimp hat that's like, I don't even know what you call it. It's this white hat with like a purple feather. And that just seems to work. But the serpent's tongue and groove of venom, so it's like they all have that kind of predatory kind of feel. And a lot of these chairs do, like that scorpion one. It's the venom of it. And, you know, Peter always brings in some kind of STD or STI into all of his poems somehow. So I'm not surprised to see syphilis there. But I do like that he connects the syphilis and the termites, because in this case, it's a chair. So not just, you know, disease that's going to get you. It's the insects are going to get it. And so the itching happens both because of disease and because of the insects. And it works on the person in the chair and the chair doubly. So that is just classic Peter Soleil.
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely a bite of dark humor to that for sure. Great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Stacey's on the right track with all that stuff. The idea right up front, obscene furniture, that note to how a lot of the furniture looks in the pictures you got up, they're all obscene in some manner, shape, or form. They're outrageous. They're something nobody would really buy for the note to use, so to speak. And he takes that note and makes sure to inject the obscene. The penal scorpions are definitely a great note right off the chair. And then he hits oh, cruel modernism. No more alone with television, leather-studded dreams, black lounges full of serpents, tongue and groove venom. He hits on that note, tongue and groove. It's how you put furniture together. You got that tongue and groove. So when you glue it, they meet at the point where the tongue and the groove is, and they become solid in that moat because they're made to match up that way. I like the six syphilis, the termites, a great note to how old furniture some gets, and if it's not taken care of, it gets infested with some things. The fleas of fabric infestation, another nice touch. Moving on to the next program. Then you roll into the seat that you find in the game show, edgy in her seat, stealing contemporary vinyl. Ugly, uncomfortable. And then the prize of redecoration. Oh, Almodovar. Hey, you know what? Let's turn it into an Edwardian motif. The bad defeat, sound of a Jap Zero, no art of IKEA, Fuji. The thought of, again, more ugly furniture, nothing contemporary, so to speak. But going back to where, all right, this touch of modernism opens up the point of giving the egg chair, where you actually sit in the chair. It's shaped like an egg, and it's got two speakers built into the chair so you can listen to the TV. Not an exactly a comfortable motif, the buried into a chair that kind of sings in your ears, so to speak. And then the thought, the last one, umbrellas on a glowing beach, the swell and melt. That note of people in the moment melting, because sometimes those chairs get really hot. If you don't pay attention, you sit down on them, you know what? Most of your body melts with the heat that's emanated off them.
Oh, my gosh, right? Yeah, so true there. Great comment there, Rex. And ID, your thoughts.
So going to this, oh, cool modernism, no more alone with television. For some reason, I felt like that was a slap at the maker of the chairs saying, okay, you cannot sit in front of television anymore if you're going to keep making chairs like this. Getting crazy ideas. And then there's the, it's been mentioned a couple of times by y'all, but there's tongue and groove denim. I don't know why, but those four words, the way that that's put together, it's just really, just, I don't know, it stands out to me. I really like it. But looking at tongue and groove venom, venom is generally like a poison. It's like it's, you know, it's something that's not necessarily a good thing. And if you go back to where I said that I think he's hinting that whoever's making these chairs really shouldn't watch TV no more, that they're creating, that it's poisonous to their craft of using tongue and groove to make chairs. And this is black lounges full of serpents. It's kind of like saying that you got an idea somehow to create a chair that's full of serpents. And I feel like this is kind of like a whole, like, what are you even doing right now? Why does this chair even look like this? What does this one look like this? And then kind of describing it, some of them in, you know, different ways. And I think this is a really brilliant piece. Lots to unpack there, but definitely a great piece altogether. And I thoroughly enjoyed reading it, and I think they did a great job.
Oh, absolutely. And I can definitely see that whole idea of, yeah, what the heck is going on with these chairs? So great comments, everybody. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
We got True Love Whiskey and the Petunia Chair by Seaglass. Stacey, that sounds like it's just made for you.
True Love Whiskey and the Petunia Chair by Seaglass. The sofa and settee are cozy company, squashed up close with true love, pets and family, a place and of meets and eats and TV screen. But the average chair is a sad, solitary thing. Single legs, equally spaced, their destiny never to meet. Four lonely sentinels supporting a seat. And its back, perpendicular, made of wood or metal struts, sometimes upholstered and stuffed to keep its spirit of singleness up. I use one as a clothes horse, so it feels included. Drape it with a dress and hoodie with shoes underneath it, because I'd rather sit in the velvet of this soft pink petunia, balanced on a spring. True love will join me, and we'll drink whiskey, share a picnic, and blow penny whistles, then bounce and hug and spin. And pull.
Oh, great read there, Daisy. That's absolutely delightful read. And
you
couldn't
see it, but I made three smiles at the end because there were smiley faces. I did, like, exaggerated smiles three times.
Oh, I like that. And, yes, I like that she put three smiles at the end. You know, such a wonderful write. I love the imagery and the idea that some chairs are meant to just hang laundry on and some are just meant to have fun with. Very cool. And ID, let's start with your thoughts.
So, yeah, I really I like this. It was, again, one of those pieces that you can throw the adjective of whimsical on. It makes you happy when you read it. And at first, though, you kind of feel bad for the chair, but then you're like, well, the chair is not a life isn't all that bad. It brings happiness to other people, so it kind of brings you back full circle to happy again. But I like this part where it says, single legs, equally spaced, their destiny never to meet. Four lonely sentinels supporting a seat. And I don't. There was some rhyming in that. I don't know if it was intentional. Maybe it was, but I really actually enjoyed the way that that was put. Four lonely sentinels. Sentinel being a guard, something that's meant to, you know, kind of like be steadfast. A person who sentinels a steadfast, a figure of solitude and or solidarity, excuse me. And it was a really just a great way of describing the legs of a chair. Overall, the piece is a great piece and great job.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, there are some satirical notes in this, that sort of, single legs, equally spaced, they're destined never to meet, four lonely sentinels supporting a seat, and its back, perpendicular, made of wood or metal struts, sometimes of holster and stuff, and the thought of keeping its spirit up by popping a pair of shoes underneath the two front legs, a hoodie, a T-shirt, or something over it, just to give it the idea of being included in the mix, so to speak. And then the back end is pure humor, because I'd rather sit in the velvet of this soft pink petunia balanced on a spring. And then true love will join me and we'll drink whiskey, share a picnic, and blow penny whistles, then bounce and hug and spin. The note of that pink petunia chair being big enough to include the two of them in the moment.
I like that. Very cool. Great comment. And Faithy, your thoughts?
I was happy I got to be the one to read this one because it is so whimsical. And thank you, Rex, for picking me for this one. At first I was like, what do you mean it's for me? It's whiskey. I'm allergic to whiskey. But, you know, it worked out well. like, how dare you give me something I'm allergic to? It was fun. I liked the same part as ID when it's talking about them being, like, lonely sentinels. That's a really interesting way of thinking of the legs of the chair. And then putting the clothes on it, like Pam said, I thought that was cute. The idea of, like, you do different kinds of chairs for different kinds of things. So, like, yes, if you want to cuddle, you're going to go on a sofa, not on one of those chairs. But they have their purposes. And then it goes back into having something where you can be together on the chair and have a little picnic. But the bounce and the hug, you need the right kind of seat for that. So it was a playful piece. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
There it is. I Want to Sit on Your Lap by Oak Blue 34 and ID. Why don't you give that a read for us, please?
Roger that. So we got I Want to Sit on Your Lap by Oak Blue 34. At the end of the tired day, I want to sit on your lap. Show your support as you cuddle me close, your arms feeling smooth, again, one afternoon. At the end of a tired week, all I want to do is relax. Weight of my encounters supported by your relaxed frame. Your arms ready, then circle what's left after. The vultures have cut the juices from my bones. As the clock clicks down to midnight, my butt longs to be smooched by your lap. My cheeks hunger for your touch, my arms supported by yours, my feet resting against your favorite golden slippers. All this and more I think about as the boredom of my work hammers my mind into submission. as conveyor belt moves at warp speed, me struggling to keep up.
Great read there, ID. And what a wonderful write by Oak Blue 34. There's a fun sexiness to this, but there's also a seriousness in the idea of what it's like to get to the end of a long, busy, stressful day and just want to be able to relax and feel supported and understood. So wonderful write. And Rex, your thoughts.
Well, because of the chair, I'm going to go with the humorous angle itself, too, because most men don't get afford that note sitting in women's laps because we're a lot bigger. So there is that note of almost going back to a childhood note. But the thought that that golden chair, those front legs are sitting on a pair of 2-inch spike heels. So that's all from a note of playfulness in it too, because it does walk at that note of, as you said, comfort from a long, dreary and boring job that one can't stand. But hey, you know what? I need a little bit of support here, so gimme.
Yep, great comment there, Rex. And ID, your thoughts?
Well, I'd say there's not usually an opportunity where it's every day you get to sit in, you get to come home and sit in a pretty lady's lap, but this guy's got it figured out with this. I'm looking at this and I'm picking up everything that Rex put down with it, and also the author, that it's a piece about getting sick of work, and I just want to go home, and I want to sit in my daggum chair. I want to sit and feel like I'm being cuddled and in the lap of a golden chair that doesn't talk back. Sorry, never mind. But it was a great piece. I enjoyed it. I think there was some humor in here, and I think there was a little bit of, you know, just raw emotion as well of wanting to saying how much I'm fed up, and this is about the only part of my day that I am looking forward to. So I definitely felt it was a great piece for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely great comment. Yeah, I got a big kick out of the line, "My butt longs to be smooched by your lap." You know, you don't see the use of the word smooched often in a poem, and I thought it was just so fun and clever to add that in. And Faisy, your thoughts?
This was a mix of the fun and the serious, and I thought it was a good mix. The smooth against my worn out skin made sense. The cuddle me, I was like, looking at that chair, that does not look very comfortable to cuddle. And then it says It describes it as having golden slippers. Those are not slippers. What do you call them, Rex? Suicide heels? I haven't worn shoes like that in probably 15 years, and I was not too graceful in them back then. I really liked the part, "To encircle what's left after the vultures have sucked the juices from my bones." You know, wanting to be held after it feels like your life has been sucked out of you by the you know, troubles of the day. That's a really good way of putting that. And, you know, if you don't have an actual person to do that, I can see wanting a comfy spot where you can imagine it's a person. I really liked the smooch part that Pam pointed out, because also, like, smooched by your lap, the lap is giving the kiss. It's a little backwards, but it was fun. When it's talking about the work too, I like that it has, like, it's mind numbing, it's boring, but also hard to keep up with, that combination of things, where it's like, your body is stimulated, but your mind is not. So it's hard to make your body keep up because your brain's so tired of it. I've never had a job like that. Mine are usually the opposite. They're like cerebral jobs where I'm sitting still, and so I get restless. But I can imagine how I would just zone right out if it was just a repetitive motion all the time. So this was a very intelligent, playful piece. You know, it had the kind of like raunchiness of the smooch in your lap, but it had the serious nature of things as well. So congratulations, Oak Blue. This is a really fun combination of things. You managed to make it work, even though it had quite a variety of perspectives.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, Faisie. All right, and what do we got next, Rex?
Beautiful Sin by Shalini Krish. And that one's yours.
All right. Behold me and the spring of violets, your rare poison of love, have bust my gazelle heart, demystified moon jumps into live waterfall. To be the sea green illusion and glassy eyeballs, this corrupt blizzard has taken over me. I am no more myself in the ravishing toxic trance, dark cocoa melting in Odyssean quest, scarlet and poppies bold on lips canvas, skylark wings fluttering wild and vivid, spreading fervor on the bosom of coily nights. Sting my guards, yearning for a collapse, explore these petals and smooth silky valves. I am infecting pleasure and fragrance of rose when unhooking your impassioned harmonium lobes to decorate each with endless alabaster stars from the hidden edifice of chosen angels of God. In original sin, bedazzling hormones of soul and commanding me to worship you, my one and only beloved Scorpio man. End poem. And what an absolutely beautiful and stunning write by Shalini Krish. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, that last line says it all. She thinks a lot of that chair and what it bears in the note of the beautiful sin, so to speak. Now you know what the title drops into, that note of words. Demystified moon jumps in to live waterfall to be the sea-green illusion and glassy eyeball. So there's a note of looking deep within and melting, so to speak. This corrupt blizzard has taken over me. I am no more myself in the ravishing toxic trance. Again, that note to the venom from the scorpion, except the venom on this one is transportational. It hits on that idea of opium in the moment being waved in the vision of what you see and delving into its depths. That sort of, I like that opening note of the next one. Dark cocoa melting in Odyssean quest. Scarlet and poppies fold on lips canvas. Skylark wings fluttering wild and vivid, spreading fervor on the bosom of coily night. Great notes there. It is that that note of poppies, opium, the thought of being enveloped in that that mental foray, that ambitions one deep in the valleys of whatever one is dreaming. And I do like that next to sting my guards yearning for a collapse. Explore these petals and smooth silky valves. I am infecting pleasure and fragrance of rose when unhooking your impassioned harmonium lobes. It's vivid and it's also it's sensual without overplaying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love the dark yet delicate sensuality of this. So, wonderful comment, Rex. And Daisy, your thoughts?
Yeah, my response was like, damn. I don't know. It was, there's something hot about this, and I can't even quite put my finger on it. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, you had me at Odyssean, but Dark Cocoa melting in Odyssean quests, I love that. I like learning words, so I didn't know what Gazal was. You've bested my Gazal heart. So, of course, I looked it up. And just based on a very cursory search, it is a form of poetry that was originally in Arabic and spiritual romantic love. So that fits really well here because there is connection to kind of like there's mention of angels and God and like there's like kind of a spiritual connection where it's not just physical, though it is, like it talks about hormones. It feels like they have more of a connection than that. But I really liked the toxic trance of it. And that made me think about like frogs, like the kind where they're poisonous but not poisonous enough to like kill a human. So people in some places or in the past licked them to get like a drug kind of effect. And the toxic trance kind of reminded me of that. But some people have that effect on you, like not literally, but they can entrance you, and it's like you become stupid around them. And is this just me? you know, with people who can not necessarily be good for you, and they have that power over you. So it's like it's venom, it's poison, and it's intoxicating where it feels good at the time, and then it kind of kills you. That's where this went for me a little bit, which feels contradictory. So at the beginning, I was like, this is hot. And then I'm like, he's evil. But again, the trance, but there's my loop of TMI. Okay. So I really enjoyed this.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes the villains can be quite hot. So I get it. Very cool comment. And ID, your thoughts.
Good. So I keep looking at these particular lines. To decorate each within this alabaster star is from the hidden edifice of pagan angels of God. I don't know why, but those lines right there, just explode out from the page to me. And the way that they're just worded is, that, I mean, this whole poem is just so fluid in a way. It's almost like you're listening to music without having a single sound just by reading it. But those particular lines to me are just, I feel like they're just a pure just work of art. I don't know how to explain it, but this piece definitely hit a lot of notes for me in its descriptiveness, the imagery, the unique way of describing things in general, but then putting it all together and you get a hint or just a small taste of sensuality without going overboard. It's a romantic, it's got a romanticism to it as well. So definitely was a great piece. And it's a new type of poetry that I'm not used to quite reading yet, but I'm definitely hitting that follow button, and I'm going to check and see what else they got going on today. I really, really like this.
Very cool. Very cool. Great comment there. All right. And what do we have next, Rex?
She kept her seat, Rosa Parks. By Naomi, and you've got a SoundCloud for that.
She kept her seat, Rosa Parks. Tired of giving in, but not tired out, she kept her seat. Steady and strong, as a shore that never retreats before the incoming tide. In the fiercest storm, she stood firm as waves of oppression rose high and loud. She would not be swayed. She would not be drowned. Her resolve unshaken, her will unbound, her courage a testament to human will, for all a flame of hope burning fiercely still. She kept her seat and she took her stand, and the tide of change spread through the land against prejudice and hate. Her act of defiance, like a spark in the night, ignited a movement unyielding and bright as a courageous fight to set the world right.
Wonderful read and write, Naomi. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And what a perfect poem for Black History Month. And I'm going to cheat and read Seaglass's comment, because I think it reflects well what I think about this poem. I enjoyed reading every line of this celebration of the wonderful Rosa Parks. What courage and strength this lady showed the world. Lovely poem. And absolutely, I have to agree with that. Faithy, your thoughts?
I really thought this was a great topic to include, like you said, for Black History Month. And it's a key moment of a chair making a difference, of taking a stand by sitting, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it really was. And I think it was an important thing. So her writing about it just captures that power. Also, I love that she did her voice, because Naomi sounds like home to me. Like, I'm on the opposite side of Canada now, but her French accent just, like, makes me feel at home.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Absolutely. A wonderful comment there. And ID, your thoughts?
So, to this, I just had to say, like, something that Av said is that I've heard before. It's the one time when doing nothing was the most powerful something that could have ever been done. And the doing nothing but not getting up, not listening to anything that was being said, no matter what society would have told her to do in that moment, how powerful that was for her to just remain seated, just to not move. I don't know. I mean, this is a great tribute to her and to the action that she took by not taking action, by not moving. And I thoroughly enjoyed that this piece was written, you know, in honor of her. And then the way that it's written as well, it's just a powerful piece all on its own. Should be very proud of what you've written. And thank you, Naomi.
Absolutely. Good comment. And Rex, go ahead, share your thoughts with us and then bring us on to the next poem.
Faithy hit that right. It was one hell of an oxymoron, taking a stand by seating, and the double notes of a touch of humor with that. And it fits well with the pictured chair without overemphasis, but actually making the same point that she did in the very same idea of taking that seat while making a stand. Oof, too much of that. Oh, and we got A Cat's Pavane by Jack Blue. In snow's symphonic sapphire, reverberating through the night, I happened to be on the site where a beanstalk soaring high had taken someone or a jack to the clouds of happiness. The ancient stage of fairyland seem to be unrolling now, melodiously and colorfully, like a clarinet, bolero, or a cool beans amphitheater brimming bright with emeralds. On a stump, I squatted down and found a frozen leaf aglow when the snowy chair with me weightlessly began to soar slow and slow toward the clouds as if driven by the void. Before I saw a beanstalk whirl on the stump and slightly heard a purple bell or rabbit's hymn overflowing into time through the universe of snow, lightly like the lilac seed. End poem.
Great read there, Rex, and always such a delight to read Jack's poetry. His imagery is so bright and so beautiful and so filled with creative imagination. And ID, your thoughts?
Yes. Sorry, I'm coming back to it. I had to click off on something real quick. So is it Jack and the Beanstalk? Is that what I'm picking up here? The story of it? I feel like that's what I'm picking up. I mean, I know it mentions Beanstalk and it mentions Jack, but then I didn't want to mix that up with the fact that the author's name was Jack Blue. But putting it all together, if it is that, then this is a really interesting twist on like kind of like a side plot to the Jack and the Beanstalk story. And I really like some of his uses of words, the bolero, the using amphitheater is not usually used. You don't usually see somebody say amphitheater in a poem because it's just so specific of a different type of setting. But still, the use of it here is interesting when paired with Cool Beans Amphitheater. Like it's the stage of what the cool beans of the beans had created, and I think that there's a lot of creativity in everything that was done in this piece, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Are you mutating?
Oh, I'm mutating. Okay, geez. All right. Well, it would help if I said, Faisy, your thoughts off mute.
Oh.
So.
I really liked the fairy tale edge to it as well. I agree, Jack and the Beanstalks pretty clearly incorporated here. When I heard Purple Bell and Rabbit's Hymn, I also was thinking of like Alice in Wonderland. It had sort of a Wonderland feel to it all, but that makes sense because the fairy tale vibe and like there's something very whimsical about the whole thing. When it talked about the clarinet bolero, I'm so silly because it's spelled differently, but there's a thing that's like almost like a boomerang, but it's like a lasso kind of thing. You throw it and trap the. I know it from video games. You throw the bolero at things, and it holds them still. So I thought it was that, and I'm like, so the music like holds you captive. That's brilliant. But then I also looked it up, and that's actually a musical term. So I was turning it into something it wasn't, but I liked it. Well, I mean, I like it both ways, but I like the idea of music holding you captive. So I'm going to steal that in a different way. And then the sound of the first line, the symphonic sapphire, I just really like that idea of, like, the beauty of it, being musical. As someone who has synesthesia, where my senses get all mixed up, I can like sometimes hear something I look at or taste something that I smell or like what it's all messed up. So when I think of a sapphire being musical, symphonic, that just I love it. I love those two words together. They sound great together, and they create a mental sensory image that works really well. I loved it.
Very cool comment. Yeah, I like that you picked up on the little bit of the Alice in Wonderland vibe in the poem. So, great comment. And Rex, go ahead, share your thoughts and bring us on to the next poem.
All right. It's called A Cat's Pavane. So it's A Cat's Dance Through Fairyland. So maybe Jack has cats, and they're part of his forte as well. The notes to it does hit Jack and the Beanstalk. You got the a cool beans amphitheater on the back end of that second, brimming bright with emerald, touch of green there. And the note to the clarinet, Bolero, you hit that right, Daisy. I think Ravel was the first one that put out Bolero oh so many years ago. And Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck, back in the day with the Yardbirds, they wrote Beck's Bolero. So maybe check that one out, too. It's really good with it. It's intricate. It's playful. And it's melodic. That's what I'm getting with the thought with the clarinet Bolero, something very sweet, melodic, something that fits the idea of a cat's dance through fairyland. That's what I'm getting with this. And that note, so weightless began to soar slow and slow toward the clouds as if driven by the void. And it also comes off that that clear chair, with that girly chair that one of the, our writers hit on. That's the chair he's got rolling through this. Below I saw a beanstalk whirl on the stump and slightly heard a purple bell or rabbit's hymn. Purple bell has me thinking of purple bell flowers. Rabbit's hymn, Peter Rabbit, maybe? Overflowing into time through the universe of snow, lightly like the lilac sea. It all hits on that note of, you see how cats walk around? They almost dance as they walk because they're very methodical in their step. So this kind of walks on that idea of how a cat might dance through this playland from snow to greenery to puffy clouds, beanstalks, and everything else.
I like that. Cool observations there, Rex.
All right. And Stung by Mindful is for you, Daisy.
Stung by Mindful. What softly caressed, hypnotically entranced, ultimately destroyed, a supernatural touch, hints of forever, eviscerated by reality, teased me into a terminal frenzy, a vicious hope dashed. Yet I return to the embryonic womb and softness of that which cannot be debated. Are my hazy visions interpreted in a decidedly biased light? When habit becomes intolerable, the flame so long ignored is now inescapable. A vantage of guarded vulnerability, ever present yet frozen in indecision, hangs over me as the fatal shoe to fall. The sublime euphoria of us will always numb the piercing sting of truth. End poem.
Great read, Faisy, and what a wonderful write that's dark and haunting, and the idea of looking for protection from a dark world that can hurt us. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
All right. What softly caressed, hypnotically entranced, ultimately destroyed. Well, there's the full range of life right in the first three lines. And then that note to a supernatural touch, hints of forever, eviscerated by reality. Again, that third note of being destroyed. And then right in terminal frenzy, vicious hope dash, and then walking into that note of warmth. So kind of hit that second stanza, dashed thoughts, maybe love, and then the warmth, the return to the embryonic warmth, going inside themselves or returning home in the moment to seek out that mother's touch, so to speak. And then delusions in that next stanza, are my hazy visions interpreted in a decidedly biased light? When habit becomes intolerable, the flame so long ignored is now inescapable. And the last one hits at the idea of the sword of Damocles over one's head, ever-present yet frozen in indecision, hangs over me as a fatal shoe to fall. The sublime euphoria of us will always numb the piercing sting of truth. There's not a whole lot of trust in this. There's, I put the, that waiting for that other shoe to drop. The note that it might be nice right now in the moment, but there's something waiting, and I ain't going to like it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Great observations. And ID, your thoughts. Oh, I see ID had to go.
Oh, crap.
And, all right. Well,
Because I was just with his piece up.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he'll call back. I'll type a message to him while Faisy's sharing her thoughts.
I really enjoyed this. I thought it had excellent language choices, like eviscerated by reality. I totally get that. You know, when your illusion of a relationship falls away and you see what it actually was, it can feel like it's eviscerating you. Teased me into a terminal frenzy. This all sounds like an unhealthy relationship where it has come up a few times with this particular chair prompt that people are in kind of toxic relationships where they find it enticing, but also it's bad for them. I really liked the sublime euphoria of us will always numb the piercing sting of truth. Because again, it's like that person who has that power over you. It's like so amazing to be in their presence that you are able to gloss over the fact that they are not honest with you, or that your situation with them is not ideal, but you're so in love, but not necessarily love. You're entranced by them, and I think this is a really well done piece. Very nice, Michael.
Oh, I have to agree. Brilliant visceral imagery and metaphors. And I have liked how this poem and other ones have taken that scorpion chair in the direction of a toxic relationship. And this has great lines all the way through, but I do like how this speaks on the harshness of reality, and how oftentimes, it just, takes over and feels almost cruel. Great lines all the way through, but I did like that phrase, eviscerated by reality, and also advantage of guarded vulnerability, ever present yet frozen in indecision. When we get hurt so often over and over again, it can really put us at a point of feeling indecisive when it comes to relationships. So amazing, right, and very well done. I'd like to welcome ID back to the show. So,
cool.
Welcome back.
Hey, I'm here. I was getting ready for bed and the show playing, so I have been messing.
No problem. And Rex, if you want to go ahead and put up his poem, we can go ahead and have him read.
On the board.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yep, this is Pyrophobia. And there's a image of a chair kind of deal. That's why I picked this one. But here it goes. That wicked wick of that candle ditch lick, with a flame so quaint and that waxy stick, with its waltzing wild night none could predict, too drunk to move, so panting, willed ye sick. So suddenly you slung my arm to rise, you so frail didst fail and feel thy demise. Said candle didst timber topple and capsize, to thy chair its flame fell and grew in size. on edge of conscious, you just watched it spread in hues of horror, white, golden, and red. Its first tickle 'twas torture, heated dread. But did this disease thy flesh has yet been fed? Thy clothes engulfed in a pirouetting pyre, thy will to live tis weak and on the wire. Astonishing agony flows and grows higher. Ye scream inside, salvation ye desire. But burn ye shall, and indeed furthermore, thy pain shall end, but alas, not before. Thine life be thine own nevermore. Pray thou art only to death's dark chore. So she now cometh in fiery glory, for 'tis the end of thy haunting story. In poem.
Wonderful reading right there, ID. I'm glad you shared this with us. It does fit well with tonight's topic, seeing as it was inspired by a picture of someone sitting in a chair. And Faizy, let's start with your thoughts.
Is this a sonnet? It looks like a sonnet to me, but it's just the way you read it. I don't know. It had that kind of flow to it, and it rhymed, and it has the couplet at the end. So I don't know. I thought it was really cool form. I kind of saw, and maybe this is just my own crazy mind, the idea of the chair actually sometimes being the toilet, because it talks about too drunk to move, such prancing will be. To thy chair its flame fell and grew inside, on the edge of consciousness, you did watch it spread. Something about it just made me think about, like, when you're, like, holding the toilet, like, just, like, dying and inside. But it's beautiful imagery of the fire. So I don't know why that hit me, but there was some kind of part where I was just picturing the first tickle was torture. I like pirouetting pyre. It makes it a beautiful dance, which fire can be in, like, impossible to look away from, but also is terrifying, you know, if your clothes are engulfed in it. But there's that beauty of it as well. And the alliteration there, the pirouetting pyre. I mean, pirouetting by itself is just an amazing sounding word. I just like saying it. And then you have kind of more alliteration there with astonishing agony. There was another part like that. Pray thou art only to death's dark chore. I really like that line. I feel like this works on multiple levels, and I like it on all of the levels.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Faizy. And Rex, your thoughts?
It reminds me of two things. The monk in the, 1968, 69, 70, who set himself afire in the streets of, I think it was Cambodia or Vietnam way back in the day, poured gasoline over himself, set himself on fire as protest for the war. And it also hits me with that idea of the way a body can heat up to a point. It sets itself on flame. The note of the candle in here does point to the fat that the body holds that feeds the fire of self-immolation in the moment. But this, because of your title, you went pyrophobia, so this is fear of fire. So it hits on the idea with me, the idea of someone who is afraid of dying within a fire, yet is also tied to that note, because you hit on the idea of being drunk, knocking over the candle, and then the blaze. It's almost like a self-prophesizing note and coming true. The edge of conscious, you just watched it spread. There's that note of being so drunk, you're watching something in the moment. You haven't quite felt the pain yet. You know it's there, and you're watching yourself burn in the moment without the ability to get out of it or even put yourself out, because you're that drunk. You kind of sit in that note of amazement in the moment. And the back end, but burn ye shall, and indeed furthermore, thy pain shall end, but alas, not before. Thy life be it not thine own, nevermore. Pray thou art only to death's dark shore. The idea of may it be quick before you feel the pain that comes with it. And then and so she now cometh in fiery glory, for 'tis the end of thy haunting story. A final note to death in the moment, and that note of fear. Yes, within the fear of crying, of fire, you've actually completed the cycle with that fear by being drunk to the point that you cause your own demise with the fire.
Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful Doug Wright. Great rhyme and flow, strong visceral imagery. I do like how it speaks on the reality of someone being drunk and, in that moment, being engulfed by flames, and the idea that they're facing and being consumed by their own worst fear. So amazing, right, and very well done.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing with us. And let's go ahead, Rex, and fit like one last one at least in for the night. So what do we got?
There you go. You got A Little Bit of Time by Ed Hunter. And it's yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Sitting here, I hear words of pain, words of anguish, and the truth is hidden. Just scream as it seems. Some things in life don't change. They just stay the same, always time passing me by. Same old scenario, the explosions are still here. Nothing unusual, nothing has changed. I saw a shooting star pass me by, just another soul on a road to nowhere. Please tell me a story that life will bring. Lord, can you hear me now? Where am I on this earth? Is there some secret place I may go? Where is my direction? Life goes through time, no happiness, no glory, only a dream, just a virtuous dream of righteousness. End poem. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
It kind of hits on that words of MLK. I had a dream. My kids would not be judged on the color of their skin, but they judged on their character. It kind of hits me with that note. This does walk a note set in time, and it kind of hits on that because of the chair itself. It walks back to a different time, an uglier time, a time where things weren't nearly as relevant as they are today when it comes to peoples. So, please tell me a story that life will bring. And then hit that note. Lord, can you hear me now? Where am I on this earth? Is there some secret place I might go? Where is my direction? All relevant back in the day. And even more so today, because there's more slavery across the world today than there was ever in the note of history put together. So nicely done, Ed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful observations. And Faisy, your...
I really liked the line, same old scenario, the explosions are still here, because it kind of points out that, like, we're in, like, a cyclical kind of thing where, you know, the terrible things happen over and over and over again, and the situations change, and the details are different. Maybe the places are different, but, war keeps happening. Discrimination keeps happening. And it's like they're in a loop, and you can't escape it, even if, the chair could be immortal and seeing through many generations and seeing all of them go through trouble. And the sad thing is, says nothing unusual, nothing has changed. So you would think if nothing has changed, then it's boring, but it's not. There's explosions constantly. There's pain all of the time. That has become the normal is a big problem. And this is a really, like, painful piece of poetry, but I think that makes it good in that it, like, if it can make you feel, then it's well done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I have to agree that one of the most important things that poetry can do is make you really feel. And I like how this speaks on a painful history, and it speaks on a history of war and violence that stays within the soul and stays within the mind, and powerful lines and imagery all the way through. But I especially like same old scenario, the explosions are still here, nothing unusual, nothing has changed. You know, it's the idea that we seem to repeat history over and over again. I also like the questions asked in this, you know, especially opening with, Lord, can you hear me now? But searching for something or someone, you know, that can listen to the pain that you feel. And also searching for your purpose in life. You know, so amazing lines and very well done. And I believe we got through all the rights for that contest. And
yep.
Okay, very cool. And so the second contest I had on the board, Bread and Circuses, will be carried over to the next Break On Through show. Great show as always, Rex. Thank you for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you, Faizy, very much for calling in and joining us. And thank you also to ID for calling in and joining us. Thank you to Rozzy for hanging on the board and Zach. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Of course, make sure to keep an eye out on the contest and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses. Be sure, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. You can join me and Zach filling in for a Faziana for Part Sinner, Part Saint. But Fazy, I know you have a contest running for that for the Saturday 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time show. What's that contest that people can check out?
It's called You Are What You Eat, and it's about how what you consume influences you. It could be food, it could be books, it could be music, movies, news sources, conversations. Everything that you take in influences what you put out. So there's a little picture of a angel food cake and a devil's food cake, and I wanted people to write about how they're influenced by what they consume.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. And I know Captain B2 is running an awesome art-inspired contest with some very cool artwork for Saturday's 10 p.m. show. So make sure to check that out. I can't remember who the artist is, but I remember seeing his work and thinking it was very creative and dark. And
Lauren
Mark. Of course. Okay, great. Wonderful. Thank you. And, of course, our very own Intimidus Rex has Sunday's 10 p.m. show, Rhythm and Rhyme. And what are you offering up for inspiration, Rex?
Bette Midler.
Ah, great choice. Truly a classic, a beautiful choice. Very cool. All right. Well, great show tonight. Thank you, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night. Have fun at Comic-Con.